At the beginning of Parshas Vayera, Avram Avinu is recovering from his bris milah that took place at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, him and his entire household. And if I wanted to take the opportunity to review some of the procedural matters of the mitzvah of bris milah, even though none of us are mo'olim, as far as I know, and we're not necessarily planning on performing a bris milah imminently. Some of us, right? Some of us are, yes, as we heard. We're not planning on performing a bris milah imminently. It certainly does behoove us to be aware of the particulars of this very important mitzvah. So the Gemara, or the Mishnah, at the beginning of Perek Rabbah Gozer D'Milah, the 19th Perek of Masechta Shabbos, outlines that there are really two or three basic components to the mitzvah of milah. The first is what's known as milah. That's the primary one, which is removing the ar ha'arla. And the Mishnah tells us here on Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph that you have to remove besar ha'chayfes roiv ha'atara. So you have to remove the majority of the ar ha'arla that is placed upon the atara, which is the glands that is at the tip at the head of the penis. You have to remove the majority of that skin, of that foreskin. What if you removed less than a majority, but you remove some? So that's known as tzitzin hama'akvenes hamila. You remove some of the ar ha'arla, that's true, but you didn't remove enough to be yoy to the mitzvah. So that's tzitzin, meaning pieces of skin that are ma'akev, that prevent you from fulfilling the mitzvah. And one would have to go back, whether it's during the week or on Shabbos. Of course, mila is doicha Shabbos. One would have to go back to remove those extra pieces of skin, even though it involves an additional chilul Shabbos, because you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of milah yet until you remove roiv of the majority of the basar hachayfes roiv hatar, the majority of the foreskin. If you remove the majority of the skin, but there is some pieces of skin left over, that's known as tzitzin she'enam ma'akv mesamila. Those extra pieces of skin are not ma'akv the mitzvah. You have fulfilled the mitzvah. At the same time, the Gemara tells us that one should remove all of the ar ha'arla, all of the skin covering the atara, the glands at the tip of the penis, in order to fulfill the mitzvah behidura, which is kind of a hidur mitzvah, to do the mitzvah in the best possible way. Usually we think of hidur mitzvah in the context of an esrog box and something I'm going to bring to shul to show off to my friends, not in the context of the mitzvah of bris milah. But this is also an application of the mitzvah of hidur mitzvah, which really means to fulfill a mitzvah in the best possible fashion. And here, to fulfill the mitzvah of milah in the best possible fashion would be to remove not only the majority of the foreskin of the ar ha'arla, but to remove it entirely. Does one go back? Let's say you fulfilled, the basic mitzvah, you remove the majority of the skin, and there's the tzitzin she'ena ma'akvin that are remaining. Do you go back and remove them? So if it's on Shabbos, the Gemara tells us over here, on Kuf Lamed Zayin, on Kuf Lamed Gimel Mebez, of Heroes Bays, that if you haven't finished, you haven't completed the mitzvah yet, meaning the Mayo hasn't wrapped up the Makom HaMilah yet, he hasn't put away his knife yet, he's still involved in the Milah, then you go back, even on Shabbos, for Tzitzin She'ena Ma'akvin. Of course, if you haven't fulfilled the basic mitzvah yet, you haven't removed the Rav of the Ar Ha'arla, of course you go back even on Shabbos. But even if you fulfill the basic mitzvah, but you have these extra pieces of skin remaining, where it's a Hidur mitzvah to remove them, as long as you haven't completed the mitzvah yet, you go back even on Shabbos. If you have completed the mitzvah, in Piresh, and he's wrapped up the Makom HaMilah, perhaps he's put away his knife, so then you do not go back on Shabbos. Einon choizim, al tzitzin she'enam ha'akvim, because it would entail, it would require an additional chilul Shabbos. You're not permitted to do so just for the sake of a Hidur mitzvah. That's what the Gemara discusses. However, the Gemara never mentions the scenario during the week. The Gemara always is only talking about on Shabbos. You don't go back for Tzitzit Shein Ma'akvin on Shabbos because it involves an additional Chilul Shabbos. What if it's during the week? Or let's say you had a bris milah on Shabbos and you didn't remove all of the skin. Should you go back and fix it on Sunday? Or what if you're doing a bris on Wednesday and you remove the majority of the skin but not all of it? Should you go back later in the day, even after the mitzvah has been concluded, and remove the tzitzin she'ena mi'akvin? So that's a machlekes between the Tur and the Rambam. The opinion of the Tur is, yes, of course you should go back during the week. There's hidur mitzvah. Why shouldn't you go back during the week? And the opinion of the Rambam is, it's only on Shabbos, so you have to be a little bit more limited because it involves an additional chilul Shabbos of extracting, removing parts of the body and causing a wound and all that. That's certainly malach on Shabbos. So Tur says, but during the week, why shouldn't you go back? The opinion of the Rambam is, no, once you close up the mitzvah, wrap up the Makom HaMilah, put away your knife, then you don't go back, not on Shabbos and not during the week. Why? Why wouldn't you go back in order to make the Milah Mehuderes? So the Briska Rav has a well-known explanation for this opinion of the Rambam that appears in the Sefer on the Rambam in Hilchas Chanukah, where the Briska Rav explains, because the opinion of the Rambam is that Hidur Mitzvah is not a separate, independent, objective, and item that can be achieved separately from the Mitzvah itself. It's part and parcel of the Mitzvah, meaning Hidur Mitzvah demands that we do the Mitzvah Bihidura, you know, in the best possible fashion. But once you are Yoytze the Mitzvah, you can't go back later on and fill in Hidur Mitzvah, because the Mitzvah's over already. It's only, you know, if the Mitzvah's still ongoing, then you can go back later on and fill in Hidur Mitzvah subsequently. Now, perhaps the tour is of the opinion, and one could explain the tour in one of two ways, perhaps the tour is of the opinion that the Mitzvah of Migla is ongoing, and we're not going to discuss this today. There's two different perspectives, two ways of viewing the Mitzvah of Migla. Is it a one-time thing that you do when you remove the Orha Orla, or is the Mitzvah of Migla achieved by when a person has a status, you know, when he is gemalt, when he has no longer, you know, his Orha Orla removed, but it's an ongoing Mitzvah, if you remember. Or you think about the Gemara Maseches Menachos that tells us David HaMelech was once in the mikvah, and he became despondent because he took off all of his tzitzis and tefillin, and he wasn't wearing any, you know, he wasn't surrounded by mitzvahs as he was accustomed to being. So then he remembered, oh, but I have the makom ha'milah, v'nisiyash v'daitoi, the Gemara says in Menachos. So you see, you know, from this, that perhaps, that the mitzvah milah is not a one-time thing that you do when you're 8 days old, it remains with you for the rest of your life. And that's why David HaMelech had the mitzvah milah with him later on, when he was an adult, in the mikvah, you know, without any of his other mitzvahs around him, he at least had the mitzvah milah, because it was still there, you know, later on. So one could view the mitzvah milah not as a one-time thing you do when you're 8 days old, or it's done to you when you're 8 days old, but it's something that is an ongoing status. And maybe that's what the Torah's opinion is, and that's why the Torah's opinion is that you can add hidur mitzvah later on, because the door for the mitzvah milah isn't closed yet. You know, it remains open indefinitely, as long as a person has the status of being gemalt. That's not the way the Briska Rav explains the Torah. Others do. The Briska Rav explains the Torah. The Torah's opinion is hidur mitzvah is a separate objective, a separate item, and you can, even though the mitzvah of milah, the primary mitzvah, the fundamental mitzvah is over, hidur mitzvah exists independently, and you can go back later to remove the extra, you know, the extraneous skin, the tzitzin she'ena ma'ak from mitzvah milah, even though it's not ma'ak of the mitzvah, it's only for hidur mitzvah purposes, you can't go back later on and remove it later, and indeed, that's what you should do. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam, the tour over here in the third line of the second Ois Beis, quotes the opinion of the Torah, you should go back and remove even those tzitzim that are not ma'akev. The Briska Rav claims that this is a machlekes that the Rambam and the Ramah have elsewhere as well in Hilchas Chanukah. That's why it's in Hilchas Chanukah, with regards to how you should go about fulfilling the Hidur Mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Of course, the basic mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is Ner Ishu Beisoi, one candle for all of the Bnei Habayis. And you might say, you might see everyone. So the Baal Baal says, might see everyone with one candle. The Hidur Mitzvah is that everyone, or the Mahadran, Minim Mahadran is, that everyone should light, or there should be a menorah, corresponding to that particular night of Hanukkah, for each one of the Bnei Habayis. So if you have five Bnei Habayis, there should be five menorahs covered, you know, and the number of candles should correspond to that particular night of Hanukkah. But there is a difference between the Rambam and the Ramah as to how to go about lighting all those five menorahs. The opinion of the Ramah is, which is our practice, is that everybody lights their own menorah. So Baal Bais goes first, he lights his menorah, then everyone afterwards lights their own. The opinion of the Rambam is that the Baal Bais lights all five. Not very inclusive or participatory, but the Baal Bais lights all five. Why does the Rambam feel that the Baal Bais has to light all five? So the Briska Rav explains, because according to the Rambam, if the Baal Bais would light his, that would be first, that would be mighty all of the Bnei Habayis, you know, right away. And they'd be yoytzei the mitzvah already, and there'd be nothing accomplished by them going back and lighting their own menorah later. Because hidur mitzvah means doing the mitzvah, behidura. So therefore the Rambam's opinion, you know, had to be that all five menorahs are lit by the Baal Habayis and included within his larger, bigger, you know, mitzvah, instead of lighting one menorah or one candle, he lights five menorahs. The opinion of the Rama was, perhaps following the footsteps, you know, of this tour, is that, no, hidur mitzvah could be fulfilled or filled in even after the basic mitzvah has been satisfied, because hidur mitzvah is a separate objective, a separate item. So even though the Baal Bais lit his menorah, everyone else can go back and light theirs, vis-a-vis, you know, in lieu of the mitzvah of hidur mitzvah, which exists independently even after you already fulfilled the basic mitzvah. One could have understood that Ramah differently too. Everyone disagrees with this Briska Rav. Maybe what the Ramah means is, no, I have in mind not to be yoytze with the Baal Habayis, and now I am detached from the Baal Habayis and fulfilling the mitzvah on my own. But maybe this is related to that basic yesod about what is Hidur Mitzvah. Is it fulfilling the Mitzvah Behidura, or is it a separate, and therefore once the Mitzvah is over, there's no, you can't fill in Hidur Mitzvah later on, or is Hidur Mitzvah a separate thing? There's a famous saying from a Chaim, I think it's called in the Sefer Emek Bracha, by Rabbi Pamaramchik, one of the Talmidim of the Brisker Rav, with regards to if a person has two Esregim on Sukkot. One Esreg, he's not sure if it's an Esreg, it might be a lemon, but it's very Mehudar. The other Esreg, he sure is an Esreg, has the great and the best Ichos, but it's an ugly Esreg. It's not a Mehudar Esreg. So he wants to fulfill the Esreg the best way. What should he do? See, take both. One is Meyuchas, one is Mehudar, but which should he take first? So Brisker Rav, Rabbi Chaim said, you have to take the one that's not Miyuchas, but Mehudar first. Because maybe, you know, I was Yotze, maybe I wasn't Yotze. If I was Yotze, it was Behidura. Then later on, I'll take the one that's Miyuchas, but not Mehudar. Because if you switch the order, you take the one that's Miyuchas, but not Mehudar. I'm sure it's an Esrik and not a lemon, but it's not very Mehudar. So if you do that first, you're ready Yotze the Mitzvah. The door is closed. Now you gain nothing by taking the pretty Esrik later on, even though, you know, it's Mehudar, because you're ready for full the Mitzvah. The Mitzvah's over. You can't fill in Hidur Mitzvah later on. Maybe the Tur and the Ramah disagree that you can fill in Hidur Mitzvah later on, and that's why you should go back and, you know, remove the Tzitz and She'enah Ma'akfin later on. How do we paskin? So the Ramah paskins like the Tur. So that's why, you know, typically we paskin like the Ramah. You should go back and fix a, you know, a Mila later on, even if the skin is not Ma'akev the Mitzvah, even if you remove Rav of the Orha Arwa. The Piskei Tshuva, though, does quote from the Shagas Aryeh, who writes that he says, if I would have been in charge, I would not have quoted this tour. I would have passed like the Rambam. You don't go back and fix a Mila, you know, as long as it's the Tzitzin are not Ma'akiv the Mila. But what can I do? The Rambam quoted the tour. But he says, Betinok Chavash Ksas. If the Tinok is not, you know, very robust or husky or, you know, healthy, not that we're afraid it's going to lead to Sakana, but, you know, it's the child isn't, you know, can't take so much punishment. So then, you know, maybe one would think about going with the Rambam on this as opposed to going with the tour. The issue, and just leave it as it is. The main issue, though, is what is the atara? You know, it sounds pretty straightforward. Remove the foreskin, and you have to, you know, and the majority of the foreskin. However, the issue is a little bit more complex. Look over here, the Gemara in Shabbos back in Oisal of the Mishnah. You have to remove basar ha-chayfe as roiv ha-atara, the skin that covers the majority of the atara. So already the Rishonim explained that that means it covers the majority, even in one area. Well, let's first, we'll go to the Gemara. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rav. Rav says, Basar, on the second line of Vos Aleph, Basar ha-chayfe es roiv goiva shel atara, the majority of the height of the atara. So what is Rav, you know, doing over here on the Mishnah? The Mishnah said, Basar ha-chayfe es roiv atara. Rav said, Basar ha-chayfe es roiv goiva shel atara, the height of the atara. So some Rishonim explained that Rav here is coming to explain the Mishnah. What the Mishnah means is you have to remove the skin that's covering roiv of the atara, is that you have to remove the roiv of the height of the atara at any point around the atara, roiv of the height, you know, of the glands at the tip of the penis has to have the foreskin removed. Meaning, I could have removed most of the skin, but if I look at this part, you know, from this angle, roiv of the height is there. So you can't have anywhere around the atara that there's, you know, foreskin left in terms of the majority of the height of the atara. So that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins, and that's the opinion of Rav Rishonim, is over here, is the second Ois Beis. Keitzed emnishamei ha'ar ha'choyve es roiv goyve shal atara fiu b'mokom echad. You can't even have in one place on the atara that roiv of the height of the skin is there, even if on the backside, you know, there's no skin, and you look at the whole surface area, and, you know, the majority of the foreskin has been removed, that's not sufficient. It has to be, you know, in every area, roiv of the height of the atara has to be revealed. However, there are some Rishonim who understood Rav is not explaining the Mishnah, but as adding to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Basar chayfez rev atara. You have to remove the foreskin that covers the majority of the atara. So Rav, you know, some Rishonim said, Rav said, rev goyvash atara, which means not the whole surface area of the atara, but, you know, in every point it has to be around the atara. It has to be the robe of the height has been removed. However, Rashi doesn't learn that way. Rashi says, not only rev goyva, rev hekefa. Meaning that not only do you need the height of the atara, roiv, you know, roiv has to be revealed, but around the circumference at every point, you can't have, you know, roiv skin. So there can't be skin that goes around the atara, even if it's lower down, you know, where the atara gets wider, you can't have a roiv, you know, skin that covers around at any point around the circumference of the atara. So the Shach quotes this opinion, or similar opinion, And the name of the Chacham HaSfarad, you look back at the second Oiz Beis, the Shulchan Aruch said you have to remove Roiv of the skin that covers the Goiva of the Atara, the height of the Atara, even at one point, Afilu B'Makom Echon. And the Shach quotes from the Chacham HaSfarad, that no, it's not referring to the height of the Atara, but the circumference of the Atara. Basa Chayfe Roiv Hekeifa, you know, going around. And what has to be revealed then? What's the primary Atara that has to be revealed? It's not the height of the foreskin, you know, towards the tip, but where the glands is widest, closer to the body, that circumference, more like a ring, is the skin that, which is, you know, actually makes a lot of sense, because that's where the foreskin, you know, comes out of the body, so one might imagine that's where it should be, you know, primarily be cut, but it's that circumference, you know, rave of that circumference, the majority of that circumference that has to be removed. Rav Shachli used to say that perhaps they're arguing about what is the definition of atara. Atara means a crown, of course, literally. But there are two types of crowns. There are crowns that sit on the head like a cap. In which case, you know, it's roiv of the surface area. Or maybe roiv of the height of the atara that has to be removed. However, you know, the foreskin that has to be removed. However, some kinds of crowns are like a wreath, like the Greeks used to wear. So that goes around. That's like a circumference, like a ring. And that seems to be what the Chacham HaSfarad is talking about, that it's the roiv of the skin that goes around the circumference that has to be removed. The issue becomes more complicated, further, by a tshuva from the Binyan Sion, who's really just quoting from earlier Achreinim, about a Maaseh Shehayah. Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch was, of course, the Rav in Germany before the war. And the Gadol at that time in that area was the Binyan Sion, was Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger, the author of the Aruch Lener. So he asked the Aruch Lener, he said, someone saw someone else in the mikvah, and he saw that his Makom Amila looks different than everybody else. Why? Because everyone else has, of course, the Atara is revealed. But not only that, there's a charitz, there's an indentation. I'm sure there's a biological name that I'm just unaware of, but there's an indentation that's behind the glands, that's behind the Atara. And that part was covered with skin still. So they asked the Binyan Sion, does that also have to be revealed? Do you need that circumference, that ring, you know, behind the Atara, that charitz, is that also part of the Atara, the foreskin that has to be revealed, or is that not included? So he writes over here, four lines from the bottom, Nioni is daiti sha'afa pisha karva vade shadas rev ha'poiskin, digam shetach ara charitz u'bechal Atara. Yes, even that charitz is also included in the Atara, and that also has to be revealed. Nonetheless, the Binyan Sion says he doesn't think this fellow needs to go back and fix his Makom Amila. He's already 30 years old. What, are you going to go back and start fixing it now? So he said he doesn't think you have to go back and fix it because Roiv, people who are involved in Bris Mila, know what they're doing. And there's a general rule with regards to Shechita the Gemara has at the beginning of Masechta Shechulin. Roiv, Mitzuyin, Eitzo Shechita, Mumchen Hein. Most people don't dabble in Shechita. You only get involved in Shechita if you know what you're doing. So you could presume that your Shechita, you know, was probably done properly, if you have, you know, been declared, you know, an appropriate expert with the proper certifications. So a mile too. Most people don't dabble in Bris Mila. So therefore, says the Binyan Sion, Roiv Mitzuyin Eitzo Mila Mumchen Hein, and we could presume that the Bris Mila was probably done properly at some point, and the skin, you know, maybe grew back a little bit. But his Bris Mila was certainly done properly the first time. However, you know, ideally speaking, when first performing a Bris Mila, of course, Roiv of the Atara should be revealed, not only the Roiv Goiva, Roiv of the height of the Atara, but even Roiv of the circumference at any point around the glands, and not only that, even the indentation, the charitz that goes behind the glands, ideally, of course, should also be revealed. The issue becomes, again, even further complicated by another issue, which is how do you assess, you know, these things? Do you assess it when the Aver is Bekishoi, erect, or do you assess it when the Aver is Barafa, when it's flaccid? So the Gemara, commenting over here on the Gemara Masechta the Shabbos of Bekerois Aleph, quotes over there in the Mishnah, the end of the first line, Im Haya Bal Basar, let's say the Tinoik is a pudgy Tinoik, and you remove the Ar Ha'arla, but the skin starts to creep back over the Atara. This can happen. A friend, this happened to a few of his boys. The skin, and I've been told by pediatricians, it's quite common. Not, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens. That the skin started to creep back over the Atara. So what do? You have to keep pulling it back. You have to pull it back. And if you pull it back enough times, it will stay where it is. Sometimes they say to, you know, put Vaseline there so it doesn't adhere to the Atara. But if it sits there long enough, it can begin to adhere to the Atara. And now you have, it looks like, the kid, you know, never had a Bris Mila. So the Mishnah says, "Mhayah bal basar misaknu mipnei maris ha'ayin." You have to fix it because of a maris ha'ayin. That it looks like this person, you know, never had a Bris Mila. Since the issue is only maris ha'ayin, by the way, Look over here, the Ramah writes in Reish Samach Aleph Tziv Vav, in the name of the Trumas Hadeshin on the third line, Ve'ein Tzar Shia Nireh Be'ez Kishuya Roiv Atara, Ho V'nimo Pamachas Kagin. You don't need Roiv of the Atara like you require when you're doing a Bris Milah for the first time, because here the issue is only Marasayin. So Afilu Eino Nireh Rak Ma'at Miyota Atara Shanimo Sagi, that's enough. Even if only a part of the Atara is visible, so that it's obvious that he had a Bris Milah, that's enough. Ve'ein Tzarach Limo Shenis. He doesn't, you don't need to go back and fix it, even if Roiv of the Atara is not revealed. That's enough for the Maris Ayin. But when do you assess whether or not there's a Maris Ayin issue over here with this child? Do you assess it when the Aver Hazachrus is flaccid, or when it is Bekishoi, when it is erect? So the Gemara there says in the third line, Ois Aleph, Katan Masuba Babasa, Roy Noisa calls Mancha Miskashe. You view it when the Aver is erect. Venira Moho, Eno Tzarech Limo. Then you don't have to go back and fix it. Vimlav Tzarech Limo. So you assess it when it is Bekishoi. However, look over here, Ois Daud on the fourth line. The Shach quotes again in the name of the Chacham Hasfardi, this anonymous Chacham Hasfardi. I don't remember him being quoted too often throughout Shulchan Aruch. But the Beis Yosef quotes again from the Chacham Hasfardi, Nira Shehichme Yoiser, Shebedikas Hakisho Yenemer Lagavi, Bini Hamasurbo, Vamaduldo, Shinimo Tchil Kilchasan. The only time you check when the Aver is Bekishoi is when we're talking about Maris Ayin. When you're doing a meal for the first time, of Ochol Hashar, Tzara Shetehea, Tara Megula, Av Sheloi B'Shas Kishoi. Even when the Aver is flaccid, the Atara has to be revealed. So the Shach says, actually, he would not have passed like this Chacham Asfardi. He found a Yushalmi that equates the two, the Maris Ayin, together with the initial mitzvah Bris Milah, that both you assess when the Aver is B'Kishoi. And of course, it's a reflex. The Aver, fluctuates sometimes, Bekishoi sometimes, Berofe. So you have to check, the Bris Milah also should be assessed, not at the time the Aver is Berofe, but when the Aver is Bekishoi, even when you're doing the Bris Milah for the first time. Yushalmi equates the two. However, the Pischei Tshuva quotes from the Chassam Sofer that many, many Paskin like this, Chacham Asfardi, that you have to assess the Bris Milah the initial time, not B'Shas Kishoi, but when the Aver is Hazachrus is flaccid, which would mean the Sefer Abris. The Sefer Abris is the classical Sefer in Hilchos Milah. Now there's another very popular Sefer called Oitz Abris, put out by Yosela the Moyo, who's not alive anymore, I don't believe. The very most popular Moyo in Eretz Yisrael. A four-volume set called Oitz Abris. But before that even, there was a Sefer called Sefer Abris, written by Ramosha Piratinsky, who's a well-known Moyo here in the United States, I think around Chaim Berlin. He passed away 15 years ago, something like that. So he wrote the classical Sefer in Hilchos Milah called Sefer Abris. It was a mile, an experienced mile. So he writes, if you put all these chumras together, you could come out with something a little bit dangerous. The Aver has to be assessed, for the Bris Milah, removing Reiv of the Atara, Bishad, that the Aver is flaccid when it's Berofa, which means things are a little bit more compacted. And you have to remove not only Reiv, if you put all the chumras together, not only Reiv Goiv of the Atara, the height of the Atara towards the tip, but even the circumference around the base of the glands, where it's widest. And not only that, The charitz behind it too also has to be revealed. So he said, you put all these chumras together, you just have to be careful, very experienced, that you don't cut too much skin. Because if you cut too much skin, the child, unfortunately, could develop scar tissue, and you might need other, not only cosmetic things, but, other skin issues, grafting. We don't want to talk about all the things that could possibly go wrong if you cut too much skin. Certainly could be an issue in terms of the healthy functioning of the child. So you just have to be careful with, taking the chumras too far, not to cut too much skin. At the same time, on the other side of the coin, some Ma'alim are a little bit too cautious because of the danger of cutting too much skin. Some Ma'alim choose to cut, less. So much so that there are those that have called into question today, certain Ma'alim, that they don't cut enough skin. And they're not cutting, what is, according to some, the Or HaKhaifa, Reiv HaTara, depending on how you define what the Atara is. So much so that Sternbach, in his Sefer Tshuvas Van Hoggis, in a few places, lambasts certain Merlin that they don't cut enough skin. And he wanted to institute, even though he was not successful, not here, not in Eretz Yisrael, but he wanted to institute that there should always be another Merl watching the Merl do the Bris Milah. And many Milahs, usually there's a pediatrician watching. I don't know why, just making sure that everything is done, the proper way. Sometimes Merlin like that, sometimes they don't like it. But they certainly are not necessarily authorities on how much skin has to be cut. You know what they've seen. But you know, but he wanted that every male should have another male looking over his shoulder, making sure he's cutting the right amount of skin. Understandably, that's not going to be popular. Maelim hate it when you interfere in their business at all. Certainly, if you're going to have another male second guessing the male while he's doing the bris milah, it's like having a certain, you know, that's I can see why that might not end well. But we understand where he's coming from. This is an issue that's a constant, you know, an issue in milah to make sure that you don't chas v'shalom cut too much, but at the same time, you have to make sure that you're cutting the right amount. And that's why experience, of course, goes a long way. But this is the first part of milah. Milah, removing the ar ha'arla. Underneath the ar ha'arla is an ar ha'priya, which is a mucus membrane. So there's a second part of the mitzvah milah, which is they used to traditionally remove the ar ha'arla, would be cut off. Then they would rip the ar ha'priya, this mucus membrane, and peel it back. That was what's known as priya. Now, this mitzvah priya was not given to Avram Avinu. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Yevamos over here, Oisei, and I now from Beis. This mitzvah was not given to Avram Avinu. Some Mefarshim explain he didn't have an ar ha'priya. It was too old. It disintegrated. Others claim that it was a halach l'moish misina that came later on. It's based on the Pesukim in Sefer Yehoshua. But either way, it's halach l'moish misina. It's not enough with Mila. You have to do Priya too, even though that part wasn't given to Avram Avinu. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, over here in the second line of Vos Aleph, Mishnah, Mal v'lo para, esamil kilu omal. If you did Mila without Priya, it's as if you did not do the Mila at all. So Priya is essential. You haven't fulfilled the mitzvah properly until you did Priya. The Yom Shel Shlomo, though, and that's the Marshal, and his comments on that, Gemara Masechtas Yevamos, Ayin Aleph Beis, has two explanations in the name of the Rishonim. What does this mean? Mal v'lo para kilu omal. You need Mila and you need Priya. What does that mean? Does that mean that the Mila is not Mila anymore unless you do Priya too? Meaning it's half a Mila without the Priya, and you know, it comes in two halves. There's Mila and Priya. Or are they two separate mitzvahs? There's Mila. Mila remained the same from Avram Avinu, but was added to it Priya. And you haven't fulfilled your obligation until you do both. But it's two separate parts. Are they two separate parts or are they two halves of a whole? You understand? What's the difference? The difference is, what about Shabbos? So they used to do, I mean, it's hard to believe, they used to split it up into two kibudim, like a shever bracha. So it used to be mechabed one person to do the milah. While the baby is sitting there suffering, they would call up another one to mechabed him with priya. So after they removed the ar ha'arla, they would use their fingernail to rip the ar ha'priya and then pull it back. They would mechabed a different person. So the baby is sitting there while they're calling up another guy to do the priya. That was the custom. Can you do that on Shabbos, though? A bris milah is daicha Shabbos. But only because you're fulfilling the mitzvah milah. So can I split up the mitzvah? What that will mean is, the guy who's doing the milah is only doing the milah, he's not doing the priya. So is milah alone doicha Shabbos, and priya alone is doicha Shabbos? Or are they only doicha together as two halves of a whole? Are they two separate mitzvahs, which you need both, to fulfill your obligation? Or are they two halves of a whole, and one without the other is nothing? So Shulchan Aruch says, you gotta be careful on Shabbos not to split up the milah and the priya. Because the mole, the one who did milah without priya, hasn't done anything. He was mechalal Shabbos, ostensibly. The Ramah disagrees, and he says, no, split it up, like you do during the week. Split it up during the week, split it up on Shabbos too. Meaning, each one is a separate mitzvah, which independently is derech Shabbos. So you can be mechabe, if not, it's two parts of the mitzvah milah, not two halves of a whole. Where each one is nothing without the other. No, this is two separate things. And therefore, you can split it up on Shabbos too. It could be, I think Rav Schefter and Eretz HaTzvi suggests that perhaps this, is dependent, there's a machlaikis here, is how to understand the halacha l'moshe misinai of Priya, which came to adjust the primary mitzvah milah, which was given to Avram Avinu already. Is the halacha l'moshe misinai of Priya coming to explain milah or coming to add to milah? Because Reb Chaim writes in the Sefer on the Rambam in Hilchos Macholos Asuros that there's two types of halacha l'moshe misinai. There's halacha l'moshe misinai sometimes that explains, right, a mitzvah. Sometimes halacha l'moshe misinai, though, adds to a mitzvah. What Reb Chaim there is talking about is arla. Arla, of course, is the first 3 years in the life of a tree. You're not allowed to eat the fruits. That applies in Eretz Yisrael. It's a pasuk in Kedoshim. It also applies in Chutz La'aretz, but that's halacha l'moshe misinai. So you got to be careful. Sometimes people go picking a chalamoid, and they tell you, I once had this guy in the shul, went picking a chalamoid, and he came to the orchard. The guy said, oh, he's so proud of his orchard. It's only been here 2 years. We just grafted and removed it from a different plant and just planted it here now. He said, oh, fresh apples. They're only 2 years old, the trees. I said, it's arla. I said, it's mamish arla. So arla chutz la'aretz, is also, it's halacha l'moish mi-Sinai. But in Eretz Yisrael, there's an additional halacha called revai. The fourth year, you're not allowed to eat it indiscriminately, you have to be poide, kind of like ma'isur sheni. Does revai apply in chutz la'aretz? So that's a machlekes, the Rambam and the Goyinim. The Rambam says no, the Goyinim say yes. So Chaim says, what are they arguing about? They're arguing about what Arlan Chutzlar is halacha l'moish mi-Sinai. Did Arlan Chutzlar has come and explain Arl of Eretz Yisrael and say whatever applies in Eretz Yisrael applies in Chutzlar too? In which case, Ravai gets schlepped along as well. That's the Goyinim. Or no, the halacha l'moish mi-Sinai of Arlan Chutzlar is not mifareshes. It doesn't define or redefine the primary mitzvah. It's michadeshes. It introduces something new. An additional halacha of Arlan Chutzlars, but it's not, Lavdafka, it's the same as Arlan Eretz Yisrael. So maybe then Revai applies in Eretz Yisrael. It does not apply in Chutzlars, and that's the Rambam. That the fourth year, you have to be part of the fruits, that maybe doesn't apply in Chutzlars, because, you know, it's a different kind of halacha l'moish mi-Sinai. So too over here, perhaps they're arguing about, is the halacha l'moish mi-Sinai of Priya explaining the mitzvah of Mila? And it's two sides of the, you know, two halves of a whole, and one without the other is nothing, or is it coming to add? And you really have two separate things. We already mentioned that traditionally, they used to remove the Arha Arla and peel back the Arha Priya. Today, some Moilim, if they realize they didn't cut enough skin of the Arha Arla, they'll peel that back too. So the Artara is revealed, that's true, but you didn't remove the Arha Arla. So Pesachei Teshuva quotes the name of the Chamudei Daniel, the original Chamudei Daniel, and the Chachmas Adam has that as well, that's the Chai Adam, that Priya you can peel back, Arha Arla has to be removed. It's a mistake. Some Moilim peel back the Arha Arla. You're really not supposed to do that. It has to be, if you remove the Arha Arla and the skin is growing back, you know, it's encroaching, then you can peel it back. But to remove the initial Arha Arla the first time, that's really not the right way. But what they used to do with the Priya was tear it with their nail and then peel it back. And the nail featured prominently into Priya. The Medrash comments that on the Pasuk in Tehillim, Kol Atzma Yisai Taimarno, all my bones screened out to you, the Ribbono Shel Olam, that we have to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu with every aver of our body. And one of the, you know, even the nails come to serve a purpose in a few mitzvahs. We use our nails in the mitzvah of Havdalah, right? You look at the difference between the nail and the skin. We use our nails in Melika, in Shechten Karbonos, of Oifos, in the Beis HaMikdash, you use your nail. And the Medrash says, you use your nail in performing Periyah. You rip the mucous membrane underneath the Ha'arah, and then you peel it back. So it sounds like it's supposed to be done specifically with the nail and separately from the Ha'arah. However, and that's the way it was traditionally done, and there are still communities today, certainly Chassidish communities, that's, you know, pretty much standard practice. However, in many other places, what they started doing is Mila Upriya Babas Achas. What the Mo'el will do is, instead of removing the Arha and then peeling back the Arha Priya, they probe, before Bris Mila, they probe underneath the Arha Priya, underneath this mucous membrane, separating it from the glands, using a probe. That's why at the beginning of the Bris, the baby cries. They tell the mother, the baby's crying because it's cold, and you took off the diaper, and it's cold. It's not crying because it's cold. It's crying because the Mo'el is probing underneath the Arha Priya, separating it from the Atara, from the glands. That causes minimal bleeding. It hurts. Some of them do that before they ever get into the shul. They do that in the back room. They prepare the baby before they ever come in. That's why they move faster. Some people think if a guy moves so fast in shul, he must be a big expert. I don't know why. If a guy's moving, you know, the heart surgery, no one wants him to rush. Take your time. Do a good job. We don't say the biggest expert is the guy who can finish the surgery in the fastest way. I don't know why we have that mistaken impression that, because, you know, your speed determines your proficiency. But whatever reason, we like that when it comes to Bris Mila. So some people wanted to move fast, so they probe outside. So a lot of Moilim that move quickly inside the shul, they move quickly because they already probed the baby. They mutchered the baby already before they ever got into the room. Some Moilim don't want to do that. Why am I bothering the baby twice? I bother the baby once instead of bothering the baby. Okay, but some do it outside. It's already probed. And then they use a hemostat, which is like a forceps, to pull both the Arha Arla and the Arha Priya together away from the glands. Then you slip over that a mugging, which is a metal shield that has a slight opening, very narrow, in the middle, a slit. And they place that over the two skins, you know, separating the skin from the glands behind it, which the male, right, hopefully, does not cut. Now, all the male has to do is make sure to cut on the right side of the shield. So, Some, unfortunately, we've heard about tragic things cut on the wrong side, but they're supposed to cut on the right side of the shield. So they put the skin, pull it through, the glands is behind. The glands is too thick to fit through that narrow opening in the mugane, so that protects the penis from the scalpel he's going to use for the milah. So then he pulls the Ar HaArla, the Ar HaPriya, through the mugane, and then, I'm not saying it's a simple procedure, but, this part is quite simple, is then, he cuts the scalpel, runs the scalpel along the mugane, and that's your bris milah. You have to make sure to pull the right amount of skin, not too much skin, not too little skin, as we've already discussed. But they do milah upriya bebas achas. And they don't pull back the Ar HaPriya with their fingernail, they just remove it entirely. So this was a newer practice that happened, in the last few hundred years. The whole use of a mugane is a, newer practice, even though I believe that's a little bit more universally accepted than this procedure. Most Moilim use a mugane. I'm sure there's someone out there who probably doesn't, but most Moilim use a mugane. And that itself was a new innovation. The Prima Gadim writes about this a few hundred years ago, that was an innovation that came in his time, was to use a mugane. So that was a change. But this kind of change, removing the Ar HaArla and the Ar HaPriya together, instead of peeling back the Ar HaPriya, evoked some opposition. The Binyan Siyan, that's again Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger, the author of the Aruch HaNer. And again, it's important to put it into context. He was fighting the reform, and there were a lot of changes that were taking place. The ground was shifting. So he was opposed to doing this. He felt the Ar HaPriya has to be removed with the, has to be ripped with the fingernail and peeled back. And there are others who espouse a similar position. However, the Maharam Shik, they're heavyweights on the other side, the Maharam Shik and the Marsham, and then, fast forwarding a few hundred years, Rav Moshe, all endorsed the process of being Moel Upeireya Bebas Achas, doing it together. And they even found the precedent for this in the Chuvas of Rav Haigoin. You look over here in the Chuvas of Shari Tzedek, or Itzches on the sheet, Rav Haigoin already discussed that there were certain experts who knew how to do Mila Upriya Bebas Achas, removing both. Ukishana says, Shehem Yotza. He says, "Valios mi upriya bebas achas kishnas shesteim yotza." He says, "For sure, you yotze the mitzvah, by doing it in that way." So that's that's the typical procedure we find in our communities, is they remove the mil and the priya bebas achas. But there are certain places, there's certainly the chesed shemayel, they might choose to rip it and actually pull it back, like a little bit more traditional. The third part of bris milah, which might or might not exist, is the mention over here by the Gemara Masechta Shabbos Kuflam and Gimel Mabez. The Gemara there discusses what's known as Mitzitza. Mitzitza means after the Moel will remove the Ar HaArla and Ar HaPriya, he'll suck on the Makom HaMila to suck out some dam. Now, this was done in the time of the Gemara in order to prevent infection. They believed bloodletting removed the infections from the body, so therefore it's not surprising. They thought that to help the baby would be to suck some blood out from the Makom HaMila. As well. So, and the Gemara says that you could even do this for a milah on Shabbos, even though sucking the blood out will entail a malacha, a deraisa perhaps on Shabbos. This is all allowed because it's a sakanas nefashis not to do the mitzitza, and a male who refuses to do mitzitza, we remove him because he's endangering the child. Today, we have better antiseptics, we don't believe in bloodletting anymore. Should we continue to do mitzitza? And the Shulchan Aruch, particularly when it involves school Shabbos on Shabbos. So Shulchan Aruch already in Shin Lamed Alf Siftes, this is an Aruch Chaim in Hilchas Migdol B'Shabbos, in Hilchas Shabbos, discusses that there was a practice to wash the baby before and after bris milah in hot water in order to prevent infection. That was done in the time of the Gemara. The Gemara discusses what if the water spills, how do you go about filling the water? I don't know, a lot of discussions. So they used to wash the baby in hot water before and after the bris milah as an antiseptic to prevent infection. Already the Shulchan Aruch writes over here, Oisyud, in our times we know that there are better ways, antiseptics, and we no longer do this. V'idna, already in the 1500s, says the Shulchan Aruch, Onogu b'rechitza klal, we don't do this anymore. We don't wash the baby in hot water before and after. So the whole thing was only for health reasons, no longer applies, we don't do it anymore. What about mitzitza? Should we no longer allow mitzitza on Shabbos because it was only done for health reasons, to prevent infection, and now, we don't believe in bloodletting anymore? Our medicine has advanced. So the Avnei Neza has a tshuva where he argues, no, that this is different than washing the baby. See, washing the baby was extraneous to the process or to the procedure of mila itself. So, if it made sense in an antiseptic, you do it. If it doesn't, you could dispense with it. However, mitzitza was part and parcel of the maisa hamila. And since it was part and parcel, it was done at the time of the maisa hamila, it blends in, even though it was motivated initially by a suffix sakana. That's clear in the Gemara. But, de facto, it has now become subsumed, it has now become included, adopted by the Ma'is HaMila, and it blends in now to become part of the Ma'isa Hamiyuah itself. And therefore, even if the suffix sakana reason is no longer convincing or relevant, nonetheless, it remains part and part of the Ma'isa Hamitzvah Miyuah, because it already blended in and became adopted and part of the Miyuah itself. That's the argument of the Avnei Nezer. Should we continue to do it? But in what way is it part of the Ma'isa Hamiyuah? How is sucking out the blood part of the Ma'isa Hamiyuah? You could say that once we started doing it, even though it was motivated because of health concerns, it has now, it remains because it's blended in to become part of the Ma'isa Hamiyuah itself. What part of the Ma'isa Hamiyuah was it? So Avnei Nezer explains it was part of the Ma'isa Hamiyuah, of a part of the meal we haven't discussed yet, which is Hatofas Dam Bris. Rashi writes in Masechet Shabbos that not only do you have to remove the Ohar, this is almost, implicit, but in removing the Ohar, of course you're going to cause bleeding. That bleeding is not just tangential or consequential, that is essential, that you have to have blood at the Bris Milah. Rashi claims that this is based on the pasuk in Sefer Zechariah, Gam es at bedam brisecha, but it could also be based on the pasuk in Yechezkel. We know better from the Haggadah that v'omaloch bedomai chayi, v'omaloch bedomai chayi. I said, through your blood you will live, through your blood you will live. They mixed the blood of Dam Pesach and Dam Milah, they put it on their house, and that protected them during Makas Becheres on the way out of Mitzrayim. So there has to be Dam Milah. Milah requires Dam. That's known as Hatofas Dam Bris. In fact, the bracha of Milas Gerim is Limoas HaGerim Olahatif Mehem Dam Bris. So you need Dam Bris. So Metzitza became the formal way of fulfilling Dam Bris, is through the Metzitza, sucking from the Makom HaMilah afterwards to remove the blood. Of course, it's inevitable that it's going to happen when you cut the Or HaAlah, but this became, it blended in to become part of the Ma'isa HaMilah itself, because it touches upon one of the essential components of Milah, which is the existence of Dam Bris. And this is a separate component to Milah, not just to remove the Ohara and retract the Ohapriya, but to have Dam Bris. Without Dam Bris, perhaps you cannot have a Bris Milah. The Gemara discusses in Masechta Shabbos a Tinok that's Noyleg Mohu. The Medrash tells us a few individuals were born Gemalt. They were born without an Arla. I don't know how often this happens in the annals of medical history. I assume it must happen today, but probably exceedingly rare. But the Medrash tells us there were certain individuals who were born gemalt. What's the halacha? If a child is born noilad mohu, does he require a bris or not? Well, what are you going to do a bris on? There's no arla to speak of. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're afraid there's an arla kvusha. There's a hidden arla somewhere there that we don't see. How do you remove that? With hatofas dam bris. You need to make a poke. You can do it with a hypodermic needle, and they remove a little bit of dam. We do this often by Gerim, who already had a circumcision when he was a goy. A person converts and had a circumcision in the hospital when he was a goy. That's not kosher for, Milas, Gerus. He requires a new Mila. Part of the process of Gerus is Mila. But he can't have a Mila. He has no Arha Arla anymore. So we do Hatofas Dambris. That's Limoas HaGerim, if he has an Arla. And if not, Ula Hatif Mehem Dambris. So the Gemara says the original reason for Hatofas Dambris was because maybe there's a hidden arla somewhere there in the noilad mahu, and by removing a little bit of dam, we're extracting this hidden arla. But that makes no sense to the gerish and his gayer. He has no arla. He had an arla. We removed it. So what are we doing atav dam bris on him for? Moreover, the Rambam, even though the Rambam paskins that a noilad mahu requires atav dam bris as a gerish and his gayer, who no longer has an arla because he had it removed when he was a guy. The Rambam paskins, nonetheless, look over here, Oisudal, that a noilad mahu eats truma. Now, if a person is an arel, he actually has an arla, he can't eat truma. You can't eat carbon pesach and can't eat truma. So how could it be a noilad mahu who requires hatavas dam bris, because maybe he has a hidden arla somewhere there that's going to be removed with the prick of dam? How can he eat truma? He's an arel, effectively. How can he eat truma? So Mishkanes Yaakov has a tshuva, the Pesach Tshuva quotes it, where the Mishkanes Yaakov explains it must be the Rambam had a different perspective on what Hatavas Dam Bris is all about. Even though the Gemara brought it up initially in the context of removing some hidden Orla in someone who was born Gemalt without an Orha Orla, when they were born Mahul, obviously it has greater implications. And that is that there's a separate component of Bris Milah called Hatavas Dam Bris. And even if a person is Noled Mahul and he's excluded from removing the Orha Orla because he simply doesn't have one, or he had it removed improperly when he was a goy, and now he wants to convert, and he has the Or HaAlah to speak of, he can replace the Milo, or be Yaitse, the Geirus, at least with Hatafas Dam Bris, because that's also a part of Bris Milah, is having Hatafas Dam Bris. having that, you know, having blood. And therefore, blood is essential to the, you know, successful performance of a bris milah. There was a suggestion, you know, that was made a while ago. And in fact, this is the procedure, the way that a circumcision is done in a hospital, that you could do bloodless circumcision. This is the way it's done in a hospital. They use a clamp. What's a clamp? The clamp is called the Gumco clamp. There's a metal kind of cap that they insert underneath the Or Ha'arlon, the Or Ha'priya, the metal cap that fits underneath it. You have to make a little incision to put the cap in. And then on top of it, they put a press. And it presses down onto that cap. I guess it looks a lot like a little bit like an, I've seen it, but it looks like an orange squeezer, you know. And it clamps down. That's how they do a meal in a hospital. You leave it like that for a few minutes. Painful. Right? Tenlo used to say, they created this during the Spanish Inquisition, the Gumco clamp. But it was tongue-in-cheek. But they use it in the hospital and it clamps it down. Cuts off circulation. After a few minutes, you could remove the ha'arla without any blood at all because the blood has already coagulated, it's already clotted around, and the skin just flops off. So in the hospitals, they love this for two reasons. The first is it's bloodless surgery. No problem of follow-up, no problem of, you know, risk of infection, and it's more cosmetic. Because if you think about it, we make a vertical incision, you know, slice, the way we do bris milah, around the mugain, which is a, you know, one cut with a scalpel, which around a circular organ, or you know, it's a cylindrical organ. How's that going to work? How's one slice going to help for an organ that goes around in a circle? It's not going to be very cosmetic. So in the hospital, they prefer to use this clamp, which makes a circle cap, and it presses down and cuts off circulation out to perfect circle, you know, in the exact place where you wanted it. So in the hospital, that's how they do circumcision. And it would be helpful to do it for people who are having bris milahs in faraway places. Because you know, a lot of times you have to have a follow-up after the bris milah for the moel to check the incision and make sure it's not getting infected. So you, let's say you fly a moel out to New Zealand because you're the Chabad JOIC rabbi in Auckland. So you flew someone out to do your bris milah for you, you know, for your newborn son, Mazel Tov. Who's coming back to check it later on? So I guess you could bring it to a pediatrician after, but it's a problem. So it'd be better if you could do it bloodless, you know, no follow-up. However, when this came out, all of the Paiskim were opposed to this because you need blood. Even though there is blood when you insert the cap, because you have to make a little incision in order to put this cap underneath the Ahalan and the Priya, right at the, you know, attached to the glands. But that's not blood that's coming from cutting the Ahalan, that's blood that's tangential, you know, in terms of inserting the cap. So in order to kind of, you know, all the Paiskim were opposed to it. So there was a Moyo in the 1950s named Harry Bronstein, who developed what was known as the Bronstein clamp. And he printed his suggestion in a journal called Hapardes. He claims he got the Haskamah of a Blaze of Silver, which was a mugging that's shaped like our mugging, which is a flat piece of metal with a slight slit in the middle where you could put the skin through. But his had a hinge and a clasp at the bottom. So once you put the skin through, you could tighten it and it would cut off circulation, just like a clamp in the hospital would work, which is more of a Gumco clamp, right? The cap and then the press that's on top of it. This worked the same way. But what he did was, he carved out a notch in that slit, you know, in that sliver of space where you put the skin, a notch which would not cut off circulation at one spot. And there, when you cut with the scalpel, even after you cut off circulation for a few minutes, and, you know, there shouldn't have been any bleeding, that one spot, there's going to be bleeding from that one little notch. And he felt, oh, you have both. I have, you know, something that's bloodless. You don't necessarily require the same follow-up, but there is still bleeding. And he thought that this was the best solution. It passed by Rav Moshe. There's conflicting versions of what Rav Moshe actually said. But Rav Moshe, Negros Moshe, and they quote like that from Shlomo Zalman as well, said that such a thing might be good b'dieved. There is some blood, but perhaps not enough blood to call that, you know, the proper, you know, the amount of hatofas dam bris that we need. A newer version of this is laser surgery, which also is bloodless. But I haven't heard anyone really doing laser circumcision, so we'll leave it off the table. But it has many of the same issues in terms of, you know, in terms of this. Okay, so according to Avnei Nezer, Metzitza, even though it was motivated by health reasons, it ultimately blended in to become part of the Maisa Mila. In the context, you know, what part of the Maisa Mila did it blend in to become part of? This is the official way now that we fulfill Hatavas Dam Bris. Of course, it's going to be blood that comes when you move the Arla, but it blended in to become part of the Maisa Mila itself as part of this Hatavas Dam Bris. Now, the Gemara mentions doing Metzitza B'peh specifically. Doing Metzitza B'peh specifically. And there are many Kabbalah Dik'inyonim in doing Metzitza B'peh specifically in the Sefer Chesed LaAvram, a classical Kabbalistic Sefer. So he explains there that the reason why you're supposed to do Metzitza Dafka Bepeh is because the Medrash tells us that Chava used both of her hands to give to Adam HaRishon to eat from the Eitz Hadas. So she used her hands, Adam HaRishon used his mouth to eat from the Eitz Hadas. That's why Friday night we always attempt to be Mechaper for the Chet of the Eitz Hadas. There's few possibilities in the Gemara. What was the Eitz Hadas? Some say it was a Geffen, it was a vineyard. Some say it was a Chita, it was a wheat stalk. So in order to be Mechaper for the Eitz Hadas, the Ari HaKadosh writes that we make Kiddush over wine, to be Mechaper for maybe it was a Geffen. We make Hamoitzi over bread, Mechaper maybe it was a Chita. And it says in Shulchan Aruch, when you pick up the Kais for Kiddush, one person is supposed to pick it up with two hands. Maybe you see this by Shalosh Tudos or by wedding sometimes. Pick it up with two hands and hand it to the person who's going to make the bracha. Because Chava took the fruit from the Eitz Hadas with both hands and handed it to Adam HaRishon. So we want to, in order to be Mechaper for the Eitz Hadas, we use our hands and we use our mouth. So writes the Chesed LaAvram. So too, we should take the baby with your hands and you use your mouth to do the Metzitza. It's Mechaper, you know, for the Chet of the Eitz Hadas, which involved the sin, which involved hands and the mouth. The Ari HaKadosh writes in the Shaar Kavanos other reasons. Mila is Gematria Peh, Gematria 85. Also Gematria Elohim, which is 86, that's off by one. But the Ari HaKadosh writes, it's Mila is Gematria Peh, Gematria Elohim, Elohim is Midas Hadin. So in order to remove the Midas Hadin, which happened at the time of the sin of the Eitz Hadas, the male is Moitzet, he sucks with his mouth, Peh, Gematria Mila. And he removes the blood, and then at the end he says, Nisgala Atara, the Atara has been revealed, revealing the Midas Harachamim, and removing the Midas Hadim. So there's many inyanim that is specifically done, you know, with the mouth. 200 years ago, though, they discovered germs. And they know that, you know, viruses or sicknesses can be transmitted through saliva, through contact, certainly. So the possibility was raised that perhaps if a male was sick, he might end up transmitting a disease to the baby Loyalenu through doing Metzitza Bepeh. So they asked some Sefer, the Rav in Vienna in 1836, Sefer Yad Eliezer, asked the Chassam Sofer, and it's interesting, this tshuva from the Chassam Sofer they wrote back to Yad Eliezer is not printed in the tshuva of Chassam Sofer, which is interesting. But the Chassam Sofer wrote back to him that obviously there's Kabbalah Dekinyanim in doing Metzitza Dafka Bepeh. He's not willing to do away with Metzitza, of course, because even though it was motivated by health reasons, maybe it blended in to become part of the mitzvah. Mitzitza should be done, but the insistence of doing it bepeh, the Chassam Sofer claims, you know, there's Kabbalah Dekinyanim, but if there's any kind of sakana involved, so then you could do it through another means. So the Chassam Sofer allowed him to do it bekli, with a sponge. A sponge that can also suck out, or suction can suck out some of the blood from the Makom HaMilah and be yoytze mitzitza in that fashion. Tiferes Yisrael has like that in the Mishnayos as well. He even discusses, you know, maybe all Metzitza is only because of health reasons. That's why the reason was established. Maybe it's not as essential today. But, you know, Rav HaPeskim insists on doing Metzitza, but the Chassam Sofer said you should maybe blend it in, become part of the Makkah, you know, the Mitzvah Mila, but to do it, the insistence of doing it prepare, he says, you know, Hanistaris Lashem Aleikenu, when it comes, there's any kind of course, we should do it prepare, you know, no other extenuating circumstances, but Ein Lanu Esik Ben Hanistaris, Heka Deik Lamechus, Sakanta Kaldu, and therefore it doesn't necessarily have to, you know, continue to be done. Bepef, there's a suffix, sakana. Others, you know, argue that maybe this heter from the Chassam Sofer was only Harasha. That might be why it's not quoted in Shuvah Chassam Sofer. Even though no one would doubt its authenticity, the Bir Halacha quotes this in Hilchos Shabbos, and Shimon Shin Lamed Alef, and the Bir Halacha Sif Aleph quotes this Shuvah from the Yad Eliezer. But there were others who were more insistent that Metzitza Bepef is not just a Kabbalah Dika Inyan. You know, obviously, if there's suffix sakana, you know, sakana nefashos is derech everything, you know, with the three exceptions. But, you know, if it's not an urgent sakana, or it's not a verified sakana, or not the sakana we necessarily, you know, have to be choishish for, so then they feel Metzitza Bepeh is more than just a Kabbalah de Keinian. This is something that's, you know, a little bit more central. And then, of course, you're yoytze the mitzvah, you know, milo without Metzitza, but it should be perpetuated bal peh. Even though there was some far-fetched fear, perhaps, that some virus could be transmitted, Metzitza Bepeh should be preserved. Some Sefer felt if there was a little bit more of a suffix sakana, it could be moved to Bekli. And they quote that many, there are many poskim on either side of the aisle of this issue. So they come in as a long arichus about this. They quote from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim felt like there's some Sefer. It's not essential that it be done Bepeh. But in order to kind of make shalom, the Stechemet quotes a pshora in the name of Reb Yitzchak Ochanan to do it with a tube. They put a pipette on the Makom HaMilah, suck out Bepeh, the male sucks Bepeh, but without putting his lips on the Makom HaMilah. So that way, there's no fear of, let's say, transmitting diseases. But at the same time, you have your mitzitza bepeh. And there were many who sided, you know, with that. There are chashulchan, mitzit Pesach Frank. That it's perhaps that's the best way of doing it is doing it with a tube. And there are many today who advocate for doing it with a tube in order to prevent transmission of infection. Certainly, you know, now it's in the times of a heightened awareness of infectious diseases and epidemiology and virology and all these sciences, which are now we're all experts in. So there, you know, people are a little bit more aware of the issue. But even before that, in recent decades, many have lobbied on behalf of doing it. If you insist on doing it, prepare. But doing it with a tube, and others, of course, resisting all change in Mila. The Milam are very, you know, don't like change at all, even more than Jews in general who don't like change. But, you know, in general, they're even more resistant, more territorial, and they don't like, you know, changing at all. So, they, you know, some who insist continue on doing it prepared. In the last, you know, few decades, this issue received a lot of attention because there were those who claimed that there was a herpes transmission way before corona, herpes transmission from the male to the tinoic. Herpes could be very, herpes simplex is a disease that I think, you know, more than half the population comes across at some point in their life and retains it for the rest of your life. You remain with this herpes simplex. Sometimes it sheds, sometimes it manifests, sometimes not. It's latent. But when it's shedding, you can pass it on through saliva. So if the male would pass on herpes to the child, it could be dangerous to a newborn. And sometimes they've seen, you know, where the herpes developed. So it seems like it came from the makom hamila. So those that studied this printed articles against it and that, you know, about it, but the possibility, and went to the Department of Health in New York in order to get them to limit the you know, the performance of mitzitza bepeh, to outlaw it. So that many lobbied against for two reasons. There were those that said, some doctors said, the names that we're familiar with now, because we're all experts in infectious diseases, infectious disease doctors within our community who said, no, it's never been traced. The official way of doing, you know, forensics when it comes to patient zero of a virus is finding a DNA match between the person who had the disease and the one who acquired it. And that's never been done. So he argues that maybe herpes doesn't get transmitted. It was printed in a journal, Dialogue, his argument. He made a statement on behalf of the Aguda there's no documented case of herpes being transmitted from a male to a tinuk. Even though it makes sense, we all know germs, and we all know they can be transmitted through saliva, and we all know he has an open wound and he's putting his mouth there. It certainly makes sense. He says a lot of things that make sense aren't true. And maybe the amount of time that his mouth is there, and, you know, a lot of times they mix it with wine and all the other things that are going on, maybe, you know, it's never happened, or even if it's happened, very exceedingly rare. But we have no documented cases. So he said, in science, we speak about documented cases which have been verified, and this has not been verified, even though it makes sense. Others argue, we don't need to verify germs, open wound, mouth. You know, it's kind of, you know, it almost doesn't need to be verified. Well, that's, you know, two camps within infectious diseases. But there were those that argued, you know, on the danger side of it and the science side of it. There are those that argued, though, and this is, you know, where which appeals to me more, as a political, you know, is the public policy side of it. No one wants a Department of Health interfering in Jewish ritual practice. That is not going to end well, you know, in anybody's book. So therefore, we should all be opposed to the, however you feel about this issue, should be opposed government interfering and regulating the performance of Mila because, you know, at the Hachi V'Hachi, they could, you know, decide, Chas V'Shom Le'Elenu, you know, to restrict it even further. So, of course, we never want them involved, and it would be best if we could, you know, each community within our community that, you know, has different opinions about this, how important Mitzitza Bepeh is, what the dangers are that are involved, and, you know, the other, perhaps, avenues that are open, you know, other than doing mitzitza with the pair, perhaps with the tube, or perhaps with the tube, you know, being much more popular today, you know, then every community should do, like, you know, what they think. There's many, you know, different opinions about this issue. But having the government involved is certainly not necessarily going to end well. All right, Trevor.